स्थिरैरङ्गैस्तु
स्थिरैरङ्गैस्तुष्ट्वाङ्गं
सस्तनूभिः
व्यशेम
देवहितं
देवहितं यदायुः
स्वस्ति न
स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो
इन्द्रो
वृद्धश्रवाः
स्वस्ति न
पूषा विश्ववेदाः
स्वस्ति
नस्ताक्षो
अरिष्टनेभिः
स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ। So we are on the third chapter called the Advaita Prakaran. In this chapter, in the Mandukya Karika, Karikakar Gaudapadacharya, who is the guru of the guru of Shankaracharya. So Shankaracharya, Adi Shankara's guru, and his guru is Gaudapadacharya. So you can imagine, Shankaracharya was actually I think his birth is in 7th century AD. So this literature is probably at least 6th century AD. Maybe further away from that. Now, in this chapter, Gaudapadacharya wants to throw more light on this thing called Advaita. So Advaita is the topic of this chapter. And step by step, he wants us to recognize that this Advaita is nothing other than I, the Self. So I as the Self, and Advaita as the Paramatma or the Brahman, if you want to call him, there is no difference at all. In order to prove that, he first of all starts with defining Advaita as that which is avikarya, that which does not undergo any modification. So Advaita is that which remains the same at all times. In English, we can say it remains impeccably pure. Or in Hindi, as they say in the Himalayan tradition, they say jo ka jo, just as is. There is no difference, there is no vikara, there is no change, there is no modification whatsoever that can happen in this Advaita. What is that Advaita? As I already told you, it is the Self. We are not there yet. So, no modification there. Now, since there is no modification, therefore, in the absence of modification, we have to say that it cannot act as a karana for anything. In order for the cause to create an effect, it has to undergo modification. Since we say that this Advaita, this Paramatma, this Turiya does not undergo any modification, we have to say therefore it cannot be the cause of any creation. And since creation always is under the realm of time and space, since samsara is always under the realm of time and space, we will have to agree then that this Advaita therefore is beyond time and beyond space. This Advaita, which is avikari, beyond the sansar, beyond the time and space, which is beyond the karya karana vilakshanam, which is beyond the cause or the effect either, is actually the same swarupa as I, the Self. So therefore, not only the Atma, the Self, the I, was not created from the Paramatma, but there is essentially no difference whatsoever between the two. So in order to bring home this message, Gaudapadacharya takes the famous example of pot space. Not the pot, pot space. So he indicated that just as in the case of a pot space, looking at the pot, we come into this misunderstanding that pot space is created. So we divide the total space into the pot space and the total space. And then we say that the pot space is created out of the total space. Similarly, we are making a similar mistake in saying that this jiva or this srushti, both, this totality or this individuality, is created out of Paramatma, it is the same mistake. So there is essentially no creation. Just as the pot space was never created, it was only an optical or an understanding illusion. Because even when we regard the pot space as a pot space, it is nothing other than the total space alone. Similarly, when we regard this myself as this jivatma, I am none other than the Paramatma alone. Then he says that when the pot is broken, all of us will say that, oh, now the pot space has merged back into the total space. So therefore, when an individuality dies, we say that we have individualities merged with the totality. Or the soul has merged with the Paramatma. That is a common saying. The reality is that since the pot space was never created, there is no question of pot space merging back into the total space. So therefore, neither the creation nor the destruction, neither one of those two are possible. So those are the first two things, those first two misconceptions that Gaudapada Acharya removed that we have already seen yesterday. The third misconception is that having come into the samsara as a jivatma, I have been polluted, I have done wrong actions, or I have had wrong thoughts, or I have had good thoughts, or I have had good actions, or I am born as a man, or I am born as a woman, or I have raga and dvesha, I like few things and I don't like few things. All these individual superimpositions that we create on us, just as we create all the misconceptions such as impurity on the pot space. So the pot space, in the presence of all the impurities, all the contaminants, does never get actually contaminated. The pot space remains as pure as ever. The contamination is not on the pot space. It is in the air or the environment contained within the pot space. Similarly, the contamination of I as the jiva on the jivatma is also only at the mental level or some physical ailments. At the atma level, there is no contamination. Atma is as is before, pure, impeccable truth. The next topic he takes up is the question of individuality. So I take myself as to be very bright or dull or incapable of reaching the goal of salvation or this or that. Or I see that I'm an Indian or an American, or I'm black or I'm white or I'm brown or whatever. All this, he says, is superimpositions as individuality, just as we superimpose and say that this is a bigger pot, this is a smaller pot, this is a wider pot, this is a larger pot, this is a pot with a large neck or long neck, this is a pot with a small neck. All the superimpositions that are on the pot, we actually superimpose on the pot space. So just as we superimpose on the pot space the individuality of the pot, similarly, we superimpose on my jivatma, on me, the real self, all the deformations, on all the individuality and all the contamination, on me, the jivatma, which is as impeccably pure and remains impeccably pure as Paramatma. It always is Paramatma. It is Paramatma at this time, and it will remain Paramatma forever. There is no scope of changing. So therefore, that was the fourth misunderstanding of individuality. What was the first one? It cannot be created. Second one, it cannot be destroyed. Third, it cannot be contaminated. Fourth, it cannot be individualized. Even when we individualize entities, the individualized entity is not really individualized. It is a superimposition. So according to that, then the fifth misconception is actually the problem of sambandha. So what is the problem of sambandha? We say that if we say that the jiva is created, then jiva becomes the effect and paramatma becomes the cause. So we bring in again the karya karana siddhanta on this. So therefore we cannot say that the jiva is created. We can also not say that jiva is part of paramatma because it cannot be compartmentalized. So when we have the pot space, we cannot say that pot space is a part of the total space. Figuratively, we may see like that, but it never was a part of the total space. It always was total space. Think about it. Pot space never was any different from the total space. We superimpose the space enclosed by the pot as the pot space. But in reality, it ever was total space alone. Therefore, we cannot superimpose pot space on the total space as a part of the total space. And therefore, we say there is really no relationship, there is really no sambandha that can be established between the Atma and the Paramatma other than being one. So Gaudiya Padacharya says that is what is the meaning of Advaita, one without the second. One alone exists, whether you call it pure consciousness, whether you call it Atma, whether you call it Brahman, or you call it me, the self, I, the self. That alone exists. Nothing other than that exists. So therefore, having gone through this, this is what? This is the
sambandha.
Jiva Nisheda using Yukti. So logically, it is proven that there is no creation of individual existence. There is no creation of individualities, multiplicity of individuals. There is no such creation. But then what about this world that we see? Other animals, birds, trees, objects, planets, stars. What about is this Srishti? And there is a doubt in the questioner's mind, and the doubt is, well, you did actually accept that there is pot. Pot space would not have been there without the pot. So in our discussion, to prove that pot space is no different from the total space, we have to bring in the pot. Therefore, if you bring in the pot and say, yes, you had, there is a pot, the pot has to be created by
something.
Mahabhut, Pancha Mahabhut. So therefore, Pancha Mahabhut is created, space, air, fire, water, and earth. If they are created, then you require a creator. So the creator has come into the picture, has seeped into the picture. So therefore, in the 10th stanza, Gaudiya Padacharya, in one sloka, negates that there is ever a creation of Srishti. The creation of pot, according to him, is not real. The creation of pot is just like Swapna. So in order to create the Srishti, in order to negate the Srishti, he uses the example of Swapna. Swapna meaning dream. And in order to create the individuality, he uses the example of pot space. So therefore he says, Atma Maya Visarjita. This creation of this whole Srishti, the creation of the multiplicity of this world, is only created by Maya. Maya is the total ignorance, you can say. Avidya is at the individual level. Maya is the total level. And when you say Maya, immediately it means that what is created is mithya. It is not really there, but it appears as if it is there. So therefore, Maya creates, and he gives the example, he says, Sangata Swapnavat Sarve. Just as Swapnavat, just as in the dream, we create the dream world and the dreamer. Because the dreamer is required to interact with the dream world. So just as we created a dream world and a dreamer, similarly, we have actually created an illusory pot. And so there is no really real pot space anyway. It was an illusory pot space created through illusory pot. So adikye sarvasamyeva na upapattihim vidyate. He says there is really no rational argument to differentiate between the two. Or no rational argument to say that they are equal. In fact, it is an illogical thing to do in the sense that there is really no such creation at all. It's only an illusion. And that is why we have actually in Vedanta, we have created three levels of truth. The topmost is the Paramarthik Satya. Paramarthik Satya, that means the highest truth. So the highest truth is Atma alone exists. Consciousness alone exists. Nothing else is there, which is what we call Advaita or the Turiya. One step lower than that is Vyavarik Satya, this transactional world created by Maya in which we appear to be doing transaction with other entities. So that's the Vyavarik Satta. And lower than that is Pratibhasik Satta, such as in the dream. So whenever we wake up from the dream, as soon as we glide from the dream into the waking state, we give up the Pratibhasik Satta and glide into the Vyavarik Satta. So that's a one step higher. Because immediately upon waking up, we recognize that this was only a dream. It had no reality. Similarly, Vedanta claims that when we wake up from the waking state into the real state, we will give up the waking world also as no more than a mere illusion. Be careful. They don't deny that we will have the experience of this. Even after realization, the experience will continue. In that sense, it is different than dream. As soon as we wake up, the dream disappears. As soon as we realize, the world will not disappear. The world will continue to appear. It will continue to do the transaction. But the reality that we have superimposed on it will not be there anymore. Because inside we will know that this world is only an illusion. So with that, we actually have caught up to where we were. Yesterday. So we have done the 10th stanza. Now we will actually start with the 11th stanza. Before I start the 11th stanza, I like to remind you that we have started with four topics that we were going to cover from stanza number 3 to stanza number 30. What were the four topics? From stanza number 3 to stanza number 9, we have negated the individual born. The birth of individuality or the creation of individuality. In stanza number 10, we have negated the creation of totality. In both these negations, we are on the basis of logic. On the basis of logic. Now from the 11th stanza to the 14th stanza, Gaudapada Acharya will actually negate the creation of individuality based on Shruti, based on Vedic statements. So as we go, we will see that statements are taken out of various Upanishads to prove that the Shruti also is saying. Shruti means Veda. And of course, Upanishads comes at the end of the Veda. Therefore, they are called Vedanta. So the statements are taken from Vedanta, the Upanishads, to prove that even the Shruti is saying the same thing, that there is really no creation. And then from the stanza number 15 to stanza number 30, the creation of Shrusti will be denied. Shrushti. The creation of the Jagat will be denied based on, again, quoting from the Shastra, the Shruti. Okay, so that is the order. So right now we are going to see from 11 to 14, what is being denied is, the creation of individuality is being denied. So let me chant the stanza 11 and then we will dive into that. Rasadayo hi ye kosha. Rasadayo hi ye kosha. Vyakhyatastaitariyake. Vyakhyastaitariyake. Deshamatma paro jiva. Deshamatma paro jiva. Kham yatha samprakashitah. Kham yatha samprakashitah. So here Jivatma is not born out of Paramatma. And Jivatma is the same as the Paramatma. Wherever we see such statements in Upanishads, they are called the Mahavakya. So therefore, various Mahavakyas are taken. Of course, the four Mahavakyas are very, very popular. They were made popular by Adi Shankara by establishing four mathas in four corners of India. Those are Prajnanam Brahma, Tattvam Asi, I am Atma Brahman, which actually comes in this Upanishad already, and Aham Brahmasmi. So we'll not dwell on those Mahavakyas. Actually, here the teacher is taking others' Mahavakyas, and we will look at that. Now, regardless of what philosophy we believe in, whether we believe in Dvaita, or we believe in Vishishta Advaita, we believe in Purva Mimamsa, we believe in Sankhya, we believe in Yoga, or we believe in Nyaya or Vaisheshika, whatever philosophy we believe in fact, regardless of any religion that we believe in, everybody seems to accept that Paramatma, God, is birthless. Every religion and every philosophy has no problem accepting that God is never born, that God is birthless, that there is no birth date for God. In this Mahavakya, when it is revealed that Paramatma and Jivatma, the God and the individual entity, are one in the same, which individual entity? Don't go there. Don't, not the body, mind, intellect complex. That is not what we mean by individual entity. We mean the self, the real I. So the real I, the individual I, or so-called individual I, and God, or the total I, pure consciousness, are not different. Therefore, when we say that the Jiva Atma and the Paramatma are not different, and we say that Paramatma was never born, there is no beginning for Paramatma, what is the corollary? The corollary is Jivatma is not born also. But all these different philosophies don't come to that conclusion, because it is very, very difficult to accept that. It's very, very difficult and very hard to accept it and imbibe that. So Advaita Vedanta does not want to make any distinction whatsoever. It wants to go to the simple truth directly. And in Mandukya Upanishad, this truth is mentioned more directly than any other Upanishads. So there is no dancing around the words or anything like that. And Karikar actually is even more stricter than the Rishi himself, who has created the Upanishad. So he doesn't want to make any compromises. Therefore, it is said that this Upanishad is very difficult. And people who venture into this Upanishad without reading other Upanishads and having prepared their mind will find it very, very difficult and disturbing in some cases to really understand this higher principle. So therefore, normally this Upanishad is not taken for people who have not gone through study of other Upanishads. Okay. So therefore, Paramatma cannot be the cause of Jivatma, because Jivatma, Paramatma is one in the same. Now, there is a well-known example in Taittiriya Upanishad where they first talk about Brahman and then it talks about the Panchakosha. What is the Panchakosha? So we can actually say that the Panchakosha consists of Annamaya Kosha. Annamaya Kosha, the food sheet, which is the outermost sheet. Then the inner to that is Pranamaya Kosha, the vital air sheet. Then inner to that is Manomaya Kosha, the mind sheet. And inner to that is Manomaya Kosha, then?
Vignana.
What will you think will come?
Vignana.
Vignanamaya Kosha, so intellect sheet. And then inner than that intellect sheet is Anandamaya Kosha. That is also not Turiya, please. Don't misunderstand and say, oh, Ananda ho gaya, toh bhi Turiya mil gaya. Nee. That Anandamaya Kosha is not the Turiya also. So these five sheets are actually explained in the Taittiriya Upanishad. And it is said that this Panchakosha is also the Atma alone resides through and through this Panchakosha. So therefore, he says, the Upanishad says that the Brahman outside and the Brahman inside the Panchakosha is one in the same. Meaning that very power which propels the Panchakosha to function. The spark of life or the consciousness because of which we say, I am who I am. That and the Paramatma, that and the Brahman, that in the Supreme Consciousness, that in the total consciousness are one in the same. There is no difference. So this is the famous statement that Gaudapada Acharya here has taken as the Mahavakya to explain to us that there is really inherently no difference between the two. So in the second chapter of Taittiriya Upanishad in Brahmananda Valli, the Anna Rasamaya word comes. So it says Anna Rasamaya and says Esham Atma. So the Paramatma within the Panchakosha and the Paramatma outside is one in the same. So this Anna Rasamaya is now used here as Rasadayo Hiye Kosha. So the very first word in this stanza is Rasadayo. Here therefore Rasadayo simply means Annamaya Kosha, the food sheath. So Rasa and Anna is compared. Rasadayo Hiye Kosha, these five koshas. Vyakhyastat Taittiriyake. These are actually mentioned in the Taittiriya Upanishad. Desham Atma Parojiva. So each Desham Atma, in each sheath, whatever is actually residing as the Atma and the Parojiva, the Paramatma, are one in the same. Just as Kham Yatha. Kham means space. Just as the space outside the room and space inside the room is the same space. Just as the space outside the pot and the space inside the pot is one in the same. Just as the space outside and inside is same, there is really no division. Similarly, the Atma which is pervading inside the Panchakosha, inside the physical, the gross body, the subtle body and the causal body, and the Atma which is pervasive through and through this entire creation, entire universe, is one in the same. So samprakasitaha. This is very, very clearly revealed. So therefore, based on this Shruti, Gaudapada Acharya claims that there is inherently no difference between the Atma and the Paramatma, and therefore there is no question of the birth of Atma. What is being denied here from 11th to the 14th stanza? The creation of the individual Atma is being denied. Later on, we will be denying this Shruti creation as well. So that is what is the meaning of this stanza. Let us look at the next stanza. Dvayor dvayor madhu jnane. Dvayor dvayor madhu jnane. Param brahma prakashitam. Param brahma prakashitam. Pruthivya mudare chaiva. Pruthivya mudare chaiva. Yathakasa prakashitaha. Yathakasa prakashitaha. So here, in the second adhyaya of the fifth Brahmana, in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, we see this quotation, Madhu. So in the second chapter and the fifth Brahmana. So here in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, the chapter is called Adhyaya. So we can say second Adhyaya. And the section, there are several sections in every Adhyaya. Each section is named a Brahmana. So this Brahmana number 5 in the second chapter, this quotation is available, where for Brahman, the indicative word used is Madhu. Madhu means one who gives joy. Madhu means honey. So therefore we here also in our language, if we go on telling someone honey, honey, The idea is that a source of my joy. So maybe this has come from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, we don't know. But the source of joy is Brahman Madhu. And this happiness is what is indicated as one of the three features of Brahman. What is it? Sat, Chit, Ananda. So the existence principle, the consciousness principle, and the happiness principle. So we say that all the happiness that we are experiencing, which is transitory and not permanent, also is enjoyed because of the Brahman. And then we finally, when we come to the realization of who I really am, so when the self is revealed to me and I glide into the existing Brahman, I will actually have the real ananda, the real joy, the real happiness. So, there are various forms of microcosmic and corresponding microcosmic entities are there. The microcosmic and the macrocosmic entity are actually compared and they are equated. So, for example, here we just said Jivatma is Paramatma. Jivatma is the microcosmic entity, Paramatma is the macrocosmic entity. So the words are different, but the real substance is the same. The container may be different, but the content is the same. So similarly, we are also told that things that are at the micro level and things that are at the macro level can be identical. So that which is at the micro level is called adhyatmic level. And that which is at the macro level is called adhibhutam. So adhibhutam and adhyatmik, they are both the same. So here the example that will be given to us is Prithivya Mudre. We'll look at that example in a minute. But this is very easy to see, because for example, we will see that ability to see, the eyes are compared at the micro level with the macro level is the sun. The sound at the micro level is compared with Dik, the various directions, the god of various directions, or the presiding deity of the various directions at the macro level. So therefore, these two are equated. The existence at the micro level and the existence at the macro level. The existence at the individual level and the existence at the total level. The Jivatma and the Paramatma are equated by saying that they are identical. So now with that understanding, let us see if we can enter into this. Dvayar dvayoho. Dvayar dvayoho means in the pairs of micro and macro, in the pairs of two. What are the two pairs? Micro and macro. So in the pairs of micro and macro, madugnyane param brahma prakasitam. In the madhu brahmana, and so jnana here stands for not jnana as knowledge, brahmana. Okay. So madhu jnana, in the madhu brahmana, param brahma prakasitam. Param brahma is actually mentioned as the all-pervading entity. How? Prithivyam udare chaiva yatha akas prakasita. How? Just as the space inside and outside of the stomach space. Udare means stomach. So there is space inside the stomach and there is space outside the stomach. They are both one in the same, and therefore the conditioning is making them appear to be different, but there is no inherent difference between the two. Yatha akasa, just the space is the same. Akasa here stands for space. So therefore, just as the space is the same outside and inside, similarly, there is really no difference. The Upanishad points out between the Atma and the Paramatma, the Self and the Brahman. There is no difference from Tattva point of view. Only the names are different. Okay, so having pointed that out, now a doubt may arise. So Gaudapada is selectively taking the examples that are supportive of his view. A doubt may arise that he is only taking the Mahavakyas, but what about all different things that are mentioned in the Upanishads? So, Gaudapada Acharya will defend this very brilliantly. But it is actually true that there are many quotations in Upanishads which talk about duality and creation. Once there is a creation, there is duality, isn't it? So the duality and creations are not different. Once you accept sansara, there is actually duality. So there are many, many statements in Upanishads which actually are indicative that creation has taken place from Paramatma. So therefore the doubt is, why are you not taking those statements? And why are you actually, Gaudapada Acharya, taking only those statements that are showing the unification between the Atma and the Paramatma? For example, there is this famous statement in the Mundaka Upanishad, Dva Suparna Sayuja Sakha. The two birds are sitting perched on the branch of the tree, and one of them is actually enjoying the food, the other is just watching it. So there are two, right? There is one who is the enjoyer, the Jivatma, and then the one who is actually blessing the Jiva, the Paramatma. So therefore there are two. So therefore Paramatma, Jivatma are actually created. There is also another example where we say that the sparks come out of the fire. Similarly, the creation has come out of the creator. So the various sparks that have come out of the fire is indicative of, is actually taken as an example to show that there is creation. So therefore, indeed, there are actually scriptural statements that clearly show that Jivatma is born out of Paramatma. So why are you not taking those statements? That is what will be the doubt. Therefore, Gaudapada Acharya will have to actually answer that doubt. In fact, we can go on and on as to how many things there are there. But let me quote from other Upanishads to indicate that there are also equally statements that indicate the oneness. For example, in the Kathopanishad itself, which our Guruji just finished in his morning lectures for us, evening lectures for his time in India, the Kathopanishad says that whoever sees a difference between the Atma and the Paramatma, the Self and the Universal Brahman, will go from death to death. So it is actually criticized. Then in Taittiriya Upanishad, it says that if we continue to see the difference between Atma and Paramatma, between the Self and the Brahman, then you can never become fearless. And fearlessness is a primary quality of a person who is established in Brahman. In Brihadaranyaka Upanishad itself, it says, whoever sees the difference is ignorant and as good as an animal. So this is the most critical statement. That the person who sees the difference between Atma and Paramatma, his buddhi has not evolved. He cannot be even called a human being because his intellectual capacity is at the level of an animal. So such statements are also there, right? So then, if that is the case, Chan, if that is the reason, then why Dvaitam is actually mentioned at all? Why is it promoted in the scripture at all? So therefore, the Gaudapada Acharya's answer will be very interesting, but we need to have that answer for ourselves.
And this is showing why the creation is even...
The idea is that Upanishads recognize the fact that the Upanishads will be used as stepping stone for spiritual seekers. And in spiritual seeking, it will be very difficult for an initiate to accept that there is no creation at all. Because he or she is going to see the creation very much as there, interacting with that creation on an daily basis. And for that seeker to say, therefore, the creation is not there, or my body, mind, intellect is not really there, it is an illusion, will be very, very difficult. So therefore, Gaudapada Acharya says that it is a necessary thing to be there in the Upanishad. So he answers this question as to why it is mentioned to begin with, if that was not the case. And then he says that what we have to do is we have to understand that all this creation and the theory of creations are all negated in the end. So what comes in the end, even when his PhD students write the thesis, he goes through all his experimentals and say, I found this, I found that. But then he denies that in the end and say, but finally I found that, that actually nullifies everything else. So we actually take the final result as the result. So therefore Gaudapada Acharya says that that which is final proclamation, or that which is prasasyate, that which is actually, prasasyate means, what do you put it in English? That which is glorified, I think, right? That which is glorified is actually the one that is the right thing. On the other hand, that which is nindyate, like this Upanishad does the ninda, that one who sees the difference between the two is actually at the animal level. So that which is nindyate means, what is the English of nindyate actually? Nindyate means that which is condemned. Gurudev has written as condemned. So that which is condemned is to be negated, and that which is praised is to be accepted. So that is the central theme in this. Did we chant this?
13 now.
Sloka actually? I don't remember. 13. Let's chant it again. Even if I have chanted it, we can do it twice.
Jivatmanorannan
Jivatmanorannan Tvam Jivatmanoranyatvam Abedena prasasyate Abedena prasasyate Nanatvam nindyate yaccha Nanatvam nindyate yaccha Tadevam hi samanjasam Tadevam hi samanjasam Jivatma Jiva Atma Nora Anayatma Abedana Prasasyate. So he says, what is actually prasasyate, what is really glorified, is this abedana, the non-duality between the jiva and the atma. So jiva and the atma is no different. Ananyatvam, there is no ananyatam, there is no difference between the two. This abeda, this non-duality between the two, is actually glorified in the Shastra, in the Upanishads. On the other hand, nanatvam, the existence of plurality, the existence of multiplicity, is nindyate. It is criticized. Yet tadevam hi samanjasam. Therefore, any conclusion, that therefore he says, not any conclusion, therefore my conclusion is correct. What is my conclusion? That there is essentially no difference between the Atma and the Paramatma, the Self and the Brahman. There cannot be any difference. So therefore here, in a nutshell, the reason he gives is that that which is glorified in the Upanishads and that which is not condemned is to be taken as the higher truth or the ultimate truth. The lower truth is only given in order for the initiates, the seekers who have just started walking on this path, to achieve their composure so that they can actually grasp the higher truth. That is the reason he has given here. Okay. Let us see if we can do at least one more, 14th stanza. This is the last stanza to indicate that Srushti has not taken place, that there is no creation of Jagat, Srushti. Jivatmano pruthaktvam yata, Jivatmano pruthaktvam yata, Pragutpate prakirtitam, Pragutpate prakirtitam, Bhavishyat vrutya gaunam, Bhavishyat vrutya gaunam tam, Bhavishyat vrutya gaunam tata, Mukhyatvam hina yujyate, Mukhyatvam hina yujyate. Okay. So, why should therefore Dvait at all be mentioned? So, this is really here answered as well. So, in Veda, there is an emphasis on karma and upasana. So, Gaudapada Acharya accepts that. So definitely, there is definitely emphasis on karma and upasana. In fact, karma and the upasana kand comes first, and then the Vedanta and the Upanishad comes. So karma and upasana talk about the duality. In fact, any upasana, remember the very first stanza that we did? Any upasak, any spiritual seeker who is doing upasana, he says, is kanjus, is karpanya dosa. He's actually miserly person because he has not gotten the whole treasure in his hand. I mean, he has the whole treasure in his hand, but he doesn't know how to spend it or how to own it or how to claim it as his own. Therefore, he is karpanya. So, for example, in Taittiriya Upanishad Siksavalli, we can see that duality is shown. But the idea is, in order to reach Advaitism, or Advaitam, I should say, in order to reach Advaitam, Dvaitam, we have to go through the door of Dvaitam. So one statement we can make is that Dvaitam is incomplete if we can't reach Advaitism. So Dvait is a doorway through which we will actually proceed towards Advait. So therefore, Dvait can be taken as a means and Advait can be taken as the goal. We can also make another statement and say that Advaitism is impossible without going through Dvaitism. So this topic again will come actually in the next talk. So, but these two statements are very powerful if you think about it. So it will answer all our doubts and all our questions also. So I'm going to repeat it just for our consumption. Let's reflect upon it a little bit. Dvaitism is incomplete if it can make us reach the Advaitism. And Advaitism is incomplete, Advaitism is impossible, I should say. Advaitism is impossible without going through Dvaitism. So this is like saying, if the student is there and he argues that I don't want to enter the primary school because anyway I have to come out of the primary school in few years. So why enter primary school? I'll go directly to the middle school or the high school. So he doesn't even enter. The other kid actually enters the primary and never wants to graduate out of the primary school. So these are the Dvaitis. So both of them will not reach anywhere. So who will reach? The kid who will reach actually the middle school and the high school is the one who will go through the primary school and come out from the primary school. So we have to go through the Dvaita and then we have to come out to graduate into Advaita. So this is the argument. This is what will be mentioned actually. So let us see how the stanza actually translates. Jivatmano pruthaktattvam. He says, prak utpatte, in the earlier part of the Veda, it is true. Yes, I agree that prusaktvam, that it is shown that there is a difference between the jivatma and the paramatma. So why Gaudapadacharya actually accepts that. Bhavishyavad vritya gaunam tata. But in the light of the teaching that is coming further on, Bhavishyavat here only means that it is coming further on, not in the future. Huh? So in the light of the teaching which is coming on later on, this is actually only a minor truth. It is not the ultimate truth. So the duality between the Atman and Paramatman, he says, is only a minor truth or a convenient truth. Initially you accept it just so that you can make the progress, but it is not the final truth. Mukhyatvam hi na yujyate. This is not, therefore, just because it is there, it does not give us the ultimate validity of the truth. Hina yujyate. It is not proper to give it ultimate validity of the truth. Okay. So that is exactly the translation. I think we have seen it already. So we can actually see if we can do one more. We have a few minutes left. Let us see if we can do one more. This will probably be the last stanza we'll do today. Stanza number 15. I will chant it first, then I will introduce it, and then we will actually go through a deeper meaning of it. So from stanza number 15, now the Srushti is being denied on the basis of Shruti. Srushti. So the creation, the total creation is being denied, not the individuality, but the total creation is being denied on the basis of Veda. Mrulloha vispullingangai. Mrulloha vispullingadvaihi. Mulloha vispullingadvaihi. Srushtirya chodinat choditanyatha. Srushtirya choditanyatha. Upaya sovataraya. Upaya sovataraya. Nasti bedaha kathanchana. Nasti beda kathanchana. Nasti beda kathanchana is the Mahavakya here. There is really no difference between the two. So that was what he will actually come to the conclusion. So there are many, many statements in Upanishad clearly saying that Brahman is not the Karana. That the creator, there is no creation, therefore the creator is not the cause at all. In Kathopanishad we read, na jayate mriyate va vipaschita, nayam kutaschinna babhuva kaschita. So therefore there is neha nanati kinchana, also comes there. So there is no plurality born out of the Brahman. This, by the way, this Kathopanishad sentence is very, very similar to a similar statement in the Gita, but it doesn't work here. This works here for the purpose that we are using it for. So therefore, here also a question may arise. Same question will arise. What? How come you are quoting only the convenient mantra for your purpose? Just as the question was there in the creation of the individual jiva, same question can arise from the Purva Pakshi, that why you are only quoting the convenient mantra that actually proves that the two are the one in the same. So, Srushti is talked about in Mundaka. Srushti is talked about in Taittiriya. In fact, there are many, many theories of creation are talked about in the Taittiriya. So, what is the reason for it? So, therefore, the idea is that the creation is only used as a tool or a teaching matter. Once Advaita is established, then this teaching really becomes false. And that is really what is being mentioned here. Let us see. This word, let us take this word first and then we'll go into the whole thing. By the way, this statement actually comes from the Chandogya Upanishad, chapter number 6. And also from Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, 2.1.1. So 2.1.1 means second chapter, first Brahmana and the first mantra in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. So these two are really mentioned here. In the 15th stanza, also actually from Mundaka Upanishad, we can derive the same thing. Anyway, we'll come there. Okay. So, basically he says, this is only an upayaha. What is an upayaha? Upayaha simply means that this is the matter, that is a technical matter, which is used by rishis. And it is throughout used in the Vedic literature and Vedanta for sure. So among many, many other methods, this method is actually used. What is this method? So you step down from the real truth and you actually create a sequence of things, sequence of statements that the spiritual seeker will be able to accept. So let me give you an example. By the way, this is called Adhyarop Apavada Nyaya. So Adhyarop means superimposition, Apavada means negation. So this is superimposition, negation, nyaya. Nyaya means logic. So what logic is used here? First you do superimposition and then you negate. So how is that work? So first let us say that some initiate seeker is in front of us and we are actually the guru. Now we say that look at this pot. We tell the student, look at this pot. This pot is an effect. What do you think it is the effect of? What do you think is the cause of this pot? Yeah. So therefore the student will study the pot and will figure out that actually the pot is made up out of clay. Therefore he will come back to us and say, yes, I think I have not gotten the answer. You tell me whether it is right. So he will say, yes, this pot is the effect and the clay is the cause. This pot is the karya and the clay is the karana. Mm-hmm. So this is the second step. So we say, very good, very good. You got it right. So the pot is created out of clay as the material cause, and therefore pot is the karyam, and the clay is the karana. So the student will be very happy. Then we will say, go out and actually look at the pot again. Look at the pot. Is there really a pot there? So the student will go there and look at the pot and say, yes, there is a pot. What is the teacher saying? Why the teacher is asking me this question? Obviously, there is a pot. Mm-hmm. And in his mananam, he will come to the conclusion that really speaking, pot has no independent existence other than the clay. Yeah. So the first two steps were the adhyaropa. Now when he comes to this conclusion, he says, yes, actually I know now why the teacher was asking me this question. Because as a matter of fact, pot is nothing but pervaded through and through with the clay. When I touch the top or the bottom or the sides or the outside or the inside, I'm actually touching the clay alone. In fact, if I take all the clay out, pot will not remain at all. Therefore, pot has no independent existence other than the clay. Therefore, clay alone exists. So therefore, he comes back to us and says, yes, yes, I got it. I got it. Really speaking, there is no pot. Because pot is nothing other than clay alone. So then we say, okay, since you have now come to the conclusion that pot is really not there, do you think that the clay was the cause for the pot? And he will have to say, I get it, teacher. Clay was not the cause for the pot because pot itself is not there.
Yeah.
So that which is not there, effect, how can there be a cause for it?
There's no effect.
So therefore, in four steps, we created a superimposition and then we negated to make this whole understanding of the student much, much more clear through an example. So therefore, Gaudapada Acharya says that what you see in the Upanishads, what you see in the Vedanta is nothing other than Adhyarop alone. This Adhyarop is going to be doing, we are going to do Apavad later on. So this Adhyarop is going to be removed. So why are you getting all uptight about it? Understand that this is the logic, this is the upaya that we use in Vedic literature all the time, and it is quite well known. In fact, we say that adhyarop apadabhyam nisprapancham prapanchate. This is actually the way the Brahma Sutra commentary starts from Adi Sankara. So therefore, he says this is what is the real meaning, and that is what is actually mentioned here in the stanza. Let us see it very, very quickly. And so what is the idea, by the way? The idea is pot vision. This is important. The idea is the pot vision is transformed into clay vision.
Mm-hmm.
Pot vision of the student is now transformed into clay vision. Now apply it to ourselves. The multiplicity vision is transformed into the Atma vision. The unity vision, the Advaita vision, the one without the second. So that is what happens. Okay. So mruloha vispulingadyehi. So mrut here stands for mud. Loha stands for iron. Now in Chandogya Upanishad, sixth chapter, the mrut is actually, loha is actually, we can say, is metal also, because there it is, the word is used is gold. So therefore, clay and gold and vispulinga dvaihi, all the different sparks. This idea of sparks actually come from Mundaka Upanishad. And it also is in the given in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. So therefore, all this multiplicity, what is the multiplicity? The sparks that come out, the various ornaments that are made out of the gold, the various pots that are made out of the clay, all this multiplicity, he says, out of this, srustiya chodita anyatha. Yes, he says, that when you look at the multiplicity, the idea of the world is created. It comes true. But, he says, understand that, upayaha so avataraya. Avatara here doesn't stand for Krishna avatar or Rama avatar. Avatara simply means that it drive into your head. So Gaudapada Acharya says, a student, that is true, but this is the technique that is used to drive into your head, what? nasti veda kathanchana, that there is really fundamentally no difference between the Atma and the Paramatma. So Atma and the Paramatma are the same. There is no difference. So this Adhyarop Apvada Nyaya, there is also a very good story actually, which I don't know, I'm sure you have heard it before. But I will tell you because it brings about how the Adhyarop can be removed through Apvada. So no trace is left behind. This is the job of the rishis. This is the job of the masters. Therefore, they use this technique. And it is, we find that in Upanishads everywhere. And so we don't find that Gaudapada Acharya is actually trying to pull wool over our eyes, because that he is absolutely right. We do see this Adhyarop Apvada Nyaya. So a corresponding story is there, which may make actually some sense to everybody, I hope. And the corresponding story is that one businessman, when he died, in his will he wrote that whatever I have should be divided into these proportions. And he said, my eldest son should get half of everything I have. My second son should get one third of what I have. And the youngest son, he is full of energy, he is full of vigor, he is very smart, he will make his own future, so I will give him only 1/9 of what I have. Now they divided the money and all that. That was very easy to divide into these proportions. They did it very happily and everything was done. But when they came to the number of camels he had, to their utter disgust, they found that this man had 17 camels. Now 17 camels, how do you divide into?
Half.
So there would be 8.5. You don't cut the camel, because the camel will be useless if you cut it into half. So they were really perturbed and perplexed as to how to solve this riddle. Because they had to go by what the old man wrote in his will. Just at that time, another sodagar, another businessman, came by riding his own camel. And he said, what is this commotion? What is going on here? So they said, well, this is the problem, that we have to actually divide according to this, and we have only 17. So he said, no, I don't want that the old man to really go and his will to go in waste. And let me solve this problem. Let me actually donate this camel. So therefore, now he has 18 camels. So they said, are you sure you want to? He said, no problem. Just take this camel in your calculation. So then immediately they said, therefore, the eldest son will get 9 camels. Now the second son will get 1/3. So therefore, they said, the second son will actually get how many camels?
Six.
Out of what? 18, isn't it? So 1/3 means?
Six
camels. So therefore, 9 plus 6, 15 camels. Then they said the last son will get 1/9. So 1/9 of 18 is?
Two.
So therefore, how many camels they needed? 15 plus 2, 17 camels. So this guy smiled and said, let me have my own camel back. You really did not need my camel to do the camel. So this is exactly the Adhyarop Apvada Nyaya. He kept his camel and yet he solved the problem. So we kept our Advaita Siddhanta, but we solved the problem that arises in the seeker's mind by doing an Adhyarop and then later an Apvada. Okay, so this is the story of Adhyarop Apvada Nyaya. I hope that I have been clear in my rendering today. It is a very very deep Upanishad actually, and so it requires a lot of mananam, it requires a lot of reflection. I hope that after you listen and you go home while you are driving or you are doing some other work, you continue to reflect upon it, and this Upanishads only get better. So we'll start with the 16th stanza tomorrow. I had taken again 10 minutes more. We probably started about 5 minutes late, so I hope it's okay. I have just one more thing to say. So we have decided that tomorrow will be the last day of this mini series. The idea is that I will have a second standing, or second sitting, if I may say, and that during that second sitting we'll continue and finish this chapter. All right, so that second sitting we'll have to decide when we are going to do that. We'll try to do that soon enough so that I don't have to repeat everything and the memory is still sharp. This other thing I was going to say is, tomorrow being the last day, I hope I will have the permission, your permission, to do a 1.5 hour lecture. Not because I want to cover as many stanzas as possible, I think I can manage that. But I want to have at least 1/2 hour or so of question answer session in the end. Because I'm sure that the subject like this has, somebody has a lot of questions, somebody maybe want to give some input from his or her understanding, or want to contribute to the knowledge base, so that is also welcome. So we'll do that tomorrow, and so basically tomorrow we'll start at 7:30 your time, 8:30 for some of us, and we'll end at 10 o'clock, so it will be ending at 7:30 to 9 California time and Phoenix time. Okay, that is my request. I hope it's okay. With that, I will end the lecture today. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Sri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om. Thank you very much. Thank you for being here, and I hope to see you all again tomorrow.